Welcome to the VPR Cafe. I'm Rick Singeri. When we think of the foods of a particular culture, we usually don't pay much attention to how it's influenced and is changed as it's carried to other places. But a noted cookbook author has done just that in tracking how Jewish dishes vary around the globe. Here to tell us about Joan Nathan's new cookbook is Melissa Passanen, a freelance journalist and contributor to the food section of 7 Days. Melissa, welcome back to the VPR Cafe.
Happy to be here, Rick.
Give us a little background on Joan Nathan.
So I have known, as a Jewish American myself, Joan Nathan through the fact that I own several of her cookbooks. She has written or co-written 11. And I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a Jewish American cook in America who doesn't know of her or doesn't have one of her cookbooks. She splits her time between D.C. and Martha's Vineyard. She's a regular New York Times columnist, and she had a very well-regarded PBS series on Jewish cooking in America. You know, a million honors to her credit, including sort of induction into the James Beard Foundation Who's Who of Food and Beverage in America, which obviously is a very big thing.
And she has some Vermont connections, right?
Yeah, so it was so sweet. She told me when she was here that she used to go to camp in Colchester when she was a kid and ski at Stowe. And she used to go to horse shows in Rutland. And she remembered having ice cream at Seward's Ice Cream.
You mentioned that she was in Vermont. What brought her to Vermont this time?
So she came in part to visit some friends and also do a restaurant dinner to celebrate her new book at Honey Road Restaurant in downtown Burlington.
Then tell us what happened at the Ahavi Zedek Synagogue.
So Ahavi Zedek Synagogue is also in Burlington, and it is the oldest synagogue in Vermont, dates back to the late 1800s. And they hosted a lunch with Joan as sort of the honorary guest, and Richard Whitting, who is the chef and kitchen manager there, who himself has a background in food and anthropology, and this was very much up his alley. He and a set of about 10 to 12 volunteers made 14 of the recipes out of Joan's new book, King Solomon's Table, and served them up to about 60 guests. So the menu was 14 dishes, as I mentioned, and I brought one that I made yesterday for you to try, Rick. It is a Sicilian-style caponata. Apparently, the Jewish merchants introduced eggplant to that area of the world from Persia. That has in it, obviously, eggplant, tomatoes, currants, yellow raisins, olives, capers. It's kind of got a sweet and sour thing going on. What do you think?
It might be one of the most wonderful things I've ever tasted.
And it's a great use of things, you know, end of summer, fall, CSA. So just a delicious dish. So that was one of the many. And then there were so many others. There was bread with caramelized onions on the top called pletzel, which actually has a Vermont connection. Joan mentioned that she saw it on the website of a Vermont bed and breakfast called Cold Moon Farms in Jamaica, Vermont. And then there was Tunisian carrot salad and salmon gefilte fish mold, herb labne, which is yogurt cheese with beets and lentils. Just so many recipes from all over the globe with Jewish tradition behind them.
My mouth is so happy right now.
You can keep eating.
This is the VPR Cafe. I'm Rick Singeri, and with me today is freelance food writer and 7 Days contributor Melissa Passanen. We're discussing cookbook author Joan Nathan. Melissa, why is her new cookbook called King Solomon's Table?
So King Solomon was a king back in ancient Israel, and he ruled for 40 years, and his appetites of all kinds were legendary. He supposedly had 700 wives and another 300 mistresses from all over the region that was sort of now encompass the Middle East. And these women, Nathan explained, would have brought treasured ingredients and recipes, cultural traditions from their own homelands. And at the time, the 12 tribes of Israel also had to tithe foods and other valuable things to the king. So all of those would have been part of the royal court's menu. So his menu and what he and his courtiers ate was global in a way that is symbolic of the globalism reflected in this cookbook that Joan had researched over the many years she's been doing this.
Can you give us some examples of how dishes have changed as they've traveled across the Jewish diaspora?
Right. And so, as folks may know, the Jews, and this is how Joan explains it, the Jews have a history of getting kicked out of places, religious persecution. So they were always, as she put it, roaming, roaming, roaming. And they would take their traditional recipes, for example, the Sabbath stew that you have to put in the oven before sundown on Friday and cannot really touch until you take it out to eat it. You're not allowed to cook or work on it. Things like that would have been adapted to wherever they ended up. The ingredients that were available there. So one really interesting example she used was in an El Salvadoran Jewish community, she came upon a root vegetable pancake, a shredded root vegetable pancake. Many folks will know the Eastern European traditional potato pancakes or latkes, often served at Hanukkah. And so there in El Salvador, they made it with shredded yucca and topped it with cilantro cream. So a great example. She said, I was always looking for the familiar in the unfamiliar as she would travel around. She found Jewish communities, tiny one, like only 8 people left in it in southern India. And there they were making, you know, a chicken dish that might, the method might be similar, but it had cardamom in it because that was an Indian spice. Just really cool things like that.
What's next for Joan Nathan, and how did the guests at the Ahavi Zedek lunch contribute to that project?
So one of the most wonderful parts of that lunch was toward the end, after everyone had eaten this amazing spread and Joan had done her introductory talk, she asked for the members of that community to share with her their memories of Jewish food from their families. And people had the most wonderful, diverse things to share. And this is a project she's working on. Her next book will be related to memories and food. So she urged them all to keep those recipes alive, even if they just serve them for the holidays. But folks shared everything from Lithuanian honey cakes, Polish onion cookies, which doesn't sound good, but apparently they're delicious. These little potato dumplings, which in one family that had a Hungarian background were called Schliski, and in a family with Galician roots, they were called Vareniki. And then they spoke of a grandfather who never really cooked, but every year he'd roll out this special nut candy, and a grandmother who had one basic dough recipe, but with minor tweaks, she could turn it into everything from Friday night challah to a pie crust. You keep culture alive in some ways by those recipes that you continue to cook.
Melissa Passanen is a freelance journalist and contributor to the food section of 7 Days. Melissa, thanks for joining us again at the VPR Cafe.
Always great to be here, Rick. Thank you so much.